right, it's Monday, and we usually check in with Dick Weiss of WeissWright.com. Is our media critic, 30-year veteran of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, 20-year editor of the Metro section. Richard, welcome to Big 550 KTRS.
Thank you, McGraw.
I want to talk about this A-Rod story in the New York Post, which we talked to Brian Kilmeade about this on Friday, I guess. Story broke sometime last week, front-page news story in the New York Post of Alex Rodriguez leaving a strip bar and entering a hotel room with a woman that is not his wife. Front-page news story in the New York Post.
Headline, A-Rod's a Yankee Doodle Randy.
What was the other one I heard? I don't know. Maybe it was on their website, but they were calling him... His nickname is A-Rod, and they were calling him something like... What was it? Do you remember what it was?
I don't want to go there.
No, it was something like Cheating Rod or something whatever. Anyway, this is the talk of New York. This is the biggest story in New York. It isn't the bomb threat in JFK. It's whether Alex Rodriguez was cheating on his wife and if it was a newsworthy event, I guess is the question.
Right.
What do you think?
In my mind, not a newsworthy event. There are probably, I would hazard a guess that, and I have, no studies have been done.
Right.
No studies could be done, that probably 75% of Major League Baseball players cheat.
Sure.
On their spouses.
Right.
The temptations are tremendous.
Right.
Out there.
It's They're a well-known stereotype.
Guys.
It's a well-known stereotype. Let's
right.
just put it that way.
And they took pictures of him going, what, outside his hotel
right.
and followed him around. And, you know, he may have I think he showed up a few days later with his wife on his arm, and they may have some arrangement that makes it okay with her.
Right.
So, is that anybody's business? I don't think so.
But I mean, it wasn't in a Page Six gossip columnist. Guess
no.
who was seen outside
right.
the hotel with
Page One News.
Wife.
Right?
It was the front page story, yeah. full page picture of this.
Well, there wasn't anything more important going on that day.
Well, I guess, and
especially in New York,
as Brian Kilmeade told us on Friday, they were more upset that he was out late after a loss than he was out with someone
right.
who was not his wife.
Now, there was another controversy involving A-Rod in which he was running the bases and somebody, a third baseman, was camped under a fly ball and he yells something and he distracts the third baseman.
He yelled mine or
mine.
I got it, meaning the shortstop was going to get it, so the third baseman backed off and the ball fell through.
Right, and I didn't really understand what all the fuss was about that because I would do that in my beer league softball tournament and never worked for me when the guys actually had some beer in them. But, you know, if he's a cold calculating guy as he's going from first to third, he's probably thinking about what is it I can do to get the media to not focus on my sex life.
Right.
And he said, well, I think I'll holler mine. And so now they're focused on that. They did have a follow-up article on the private dancer. He was seen, told us who she was, and she's a nice Iowa farm girl.
But now the question, you sit here as a media critic and say, in your news judgment, which is sound, 30 years in the business, 20 years at the Metro section here in town, but you have this A-Rod story, you have Paris Hilton going to jail, you have Lindsay Lohan with, you know, getting drunk and DUI and all that. Not be earth-shattering, life-changing news stories. There is a market for it. I mean, people are lapping it up.
To be sure.
Right. So, is news newsworthy, or is news just what people want to buy or look at?
I think the way Joseph Pulitzer looked at it was that the news should do many things and entertain, but it has its place, and it really depends on the kind of publication that you. Or a broadcast outlet that you want to create. If you want to be the New York Post, you'll run with stories like this. If you want to be the New York Times, you're not even going to mention something like this. And, you know, diversity is great. Having lots of different publications for lots of different people is a wonderful thing. Who you want to be associated with as a journalist, something comes out of left field. If you work, for instance, we were talking about this before, for NBC, and Don Imus is putting out the kind of material he was on your air, that affects the image of the corporation, and you want to either change the image or protect it. And it really depends on the publication.
Well, but, you know, again, like you look at NBC News, let's say Channel 5 here in town, Channel 5, you know, your trusted news source. And then you fall asleep to Channel 5, and you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, and you wake up to the Jerry Springer Show. Right. And so is it the, you know,
right.
trusted news source, or is it the Jerry Springer Show?
Exactly. And if I were them, I wouldn't run that.
Right.
That would be my criticism.
And their argument
is way far away from who you are and the image you want to present to the community.
Their argument is that it's a separate entity, that you have the local programming or the programming, and then you have the news department, and they're not equal.
Oh, it's like the Rams that like to present very community-minded image, and I think they're actually pretty good about that. Are they going to bring in Terrell Owens?
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a valid point. All right, there's something else that has getting a lot of attention, and that is the Sports Illustrated article with Tony La Russa, in which it's a pretty in-depth piece by S.L. Price, who I believe has some ties to St. Louis, actually.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think I met his sister, who lives here in town. I'm not sure. I vaguely remember it's meeting his sister who, but S.L. Price writes this article about Tony La Russa, which is getting a lot of attention nationally and here locally. I find it fascinating. I've been in this business long enough to know that when you cover a team locally, that sometimes the entities that you're covering give better coverage and better quotes to people who are not in the market, and more access in some instances to people who are outside the market other than people who are inside the market.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I've never been a beat sports reporter. I've written a few sports articles in my time, and I do find it fascinating. When you're covering a team, I think the Post-Dispatch has three, sometimes four people, if you count the columnists, maybe even five people, following the Cardinals around at one time or another. There's one guy who basically, Joe Strauss, who is the lead beat writer. He writes most of the game stories.
Right.
Eric Gould is kind of the second banana. Rick Hummel is the analyst.
Right.
Doesn't always travel with the team. And you've got Bernie and Brian as columnists. And if you're the beat writer, you have to be pretty careful about burning these guys in print, because you've got to have access to them every day and you need their cooperation.
Right.
So beat writers tend to stay with the nuts and bolts and the game action, and they don't make too many waves, generally speaking. The columnists come in and out. They're paid to write opinions. Managers understand, necessarily like it, and the relationships are up and down. Rick Hummel is a keen analyst of the action, but he doesn't do in-depth
He's not asking the tough questions anymore. Not to say that he doesn't ask tough questions, but that's not
right.
Cool.
He's a Hall of Famer, and deservedly so, but not for doing character studies of baseball management. Somewhere in that mix, though, I think a newspaper needs to have a writer who can tell really rich, in-depth stories about the people who are in the game. And I worked with Vahe Gregorian at the paper. We did a series of profiles, not just on sports figures, but on interesting people across the community, long pieces where we did one on Willie McGee that was just terrific. Laurie Shantz, I think, did one on Sotoguchi not too long ago. So they have been done. Now, Tony La Russa is an interesting case. My sense is, and I don't have any special access to Tony or to any of the sports writers, my sense is that he doesn't really care for thinks highly of the skills of the Post-Dispatch sports writers. And so when he does have something he wants to say or wants to let his hair down a little bit, he will go to a Buzz Bissinger who wrote Friday Night Lights and then did a book with Tony on Three Nights in August,
right.
Which was a bestseller. And he'll give him a lot of material that he won't give the local press. The local press kind of misses out. In this case, I don't know what prompted this, but the interesting thing to me was that the way the Post-Dispatch mentioned this story was they took the most salacious piece of the article, in which Tony had apparently not. Did you know that he had a previous marriage?
No idea.
Children? Right. No idea about that. And his two of his kids took him to court. His first two kids, and the case was later dropped. But it was interesting. But that's the only thing the Post-Dispatch mentioned, and it almost sounded like one of those A-Rod stories.
Right.
You know, a little scandal mongering. But when you go to the piece, and I've put it on my the link on my website as another one of those best stories you've never read. When you go to the piece, it's a rich and textured portrait of Tony La Russa. It's a terrific piece. It's one that I think the Post-Dispatch only wished they could have gotten.
Now let me stick up for the Post-Dispatch here. Is that more of a magazine piece, not necessarily suited for a daily newspaper?
No, I think it would be. I think if the Post-Dispatch had that, readers would have been snapping the paper up. It is true that it takes longer to do that kind of piece than it does, to cover the games or do a short profile that they often run during an open date. But strong leadership at the paper would find ways to get the Vahe Gregorians and Lori Shantzes to do more of these stories because, with the 24-hour news cycle, everybody's got these little game stories or the mini profiles on people, and very few outlets are doing the kind of work that S.L. Price did with Tony La Russa. The interesting thing about this was that you would have thought that when S.L. Price said, Tony, I just want to ask you about this lawsuit your daughter's filed against you, you would have thought he would have gone after him with the fungal bat.
Well, I will say this about Tony. In the few times I have interviewed him and in the limited things I know about dicey situations, I do know that he says, ask me what you have to ask me, and I'll answer it the way I have to answer it. So I know he's a stand-up guy in that sense. Like, he won't shy away from any question, good, bad, or indifferent. And the Bernie Mickelses of the world or the Joe Strauses of the world that have to ask the tough questions, La Russa understands their job is to ask the question. My job is to answer it. I know I don't necessarily think they're bad people. I might get a little angry, but he does come to the defense of his players, whether it's a Canseco or a McGuire or a Josh Hancock. And so you really can't blame him for sticking up for his players because that's what he does. So when he's testy at somebody or, whatever, there's sort of a method to his madness.
Yeah, and as the Sports Illustrated article points out, Tony wants to be recognized as a baseball man.
Right.
And baseball men stick up for their players. And
right.
So if you put that fungo bat threat in that context, it makes a little bit more sense.
Which is what I said the day or the day after that happened. So what do you expect the man to say? The man is sticking up for his players and the family of one of his players who just died in a car wreck. So you really can't blame him because he's going to always stick up for his players. So anyway, all right. There's something else you want to plug, isn't there?
Oh yes, the Press Club. We have an event coming up June 11th, Monday. It's called Making Your Story Sing. It's a workshop where you take the techniques of songwriters, and we kind of coach and teach people how to apply that to the things that you might want to write. So if you've ever had a yen to write some lyrics or to write a story, we have a wonderful singer by the name of Phoebe Claggett who will be there, and I'll be there as well. And she sings, I do readings, and then at the end you have a chance to write a few lyrics. It's not that hard. And Phoebe will immediately put them to music and sing them back to you. And it's very, very emotional moment for many people because they write things that are very close to the bone. So if it's a little bit like karaoke, but without the humiliation, because she does the singing.
All right,
so invite you to that. It's you need to make a reservation. STLPressClub.org. info@STLPressClub.org is the email, and just send an email to the Press Club. And make your reservation, then they will tell you how to pay for it.
Do you have a link on your website?
I have one there as well. You can also go on and click on it, a link, and you can listen to one of Phoebe's songs, and you can listen do an outtake from one of our previous workshops.
So the event is next Monday, June 11th, and to find out everything, it's probably easiest to go to your website.
Yeah, just as easy to go there.
Weisswrite.com, WeissWrite.com. I have a link on my website, TheMcGrawShow.com. Dick Weiss, always a pleasure, my friend. Be good, and we'll check in with you next Monday.
Next Monday, great.
All right, good.